You know, some people think that I tell my story to get praise or to, you know, be on the news or be on shows like this. And you don't realize how difficult it is to become so vulnerable and to open your family up to that scrutiny. But I know how important it is, because when a news segment airs, I get hundreds and sometimes thousands of comments and messages and people who are suffering in silence. And they tell me how much inspiration they get. And so I don't want my struggles and everything that I've suffered to be in vain. Like, I really believe that God gives people struggles and trials to overcome them and then to be that hope and help to other people.
And a Safford City Council member is suspending his campaign for Congress.
A Safford City Councilman has suspended his campaign for Congress after suffering a heroin overdose.
His name is Chris Taylor. You may have actually know the name very well. It's been very publicized here in the Arizona media and the Arizona press.
Chris Taylor was running for the Republican nomination to challenge Democrat Tom O'Halloran this November.
And tonight, Chris Taylor says he is seeking treatment for substance abuse.
We first met Chris Taylor in 2017 as we dug in on the opioid problem plaguing the eastern Arizona city of Safford.
In a previous campaign ad, Taylor opened up about his struggles with opioid addiction after two tours in Afghanistan.
Taylor, a veteran who fought off addiction to open his own treatment center, was poised to be the success story for Safford. But he went backwards as old demons resurfaced last week. A relapse that resulted in an overdose. In a statement to suspend his congressional campaign, Taylor was very direct, saying, quote, "I'm not going to hide from this. I'm not ashamed of what happened. I wish to sincerely apologize to the amazing people who have supported me. It's a haunting reminder of a dark past that will always be looking over the shoulder of a bright future."
Hey everybody, this is Chris with the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Robinhood.com. I know you have sat back before and wanted to get involved in the stock market. You've wanted to buy stock in Amazon, Microsoft, Google, GM, Facebook, Nike, Visa, Sony, Uber, Walmart, PayPal, Disney, Coca-Cola, GE, Apple, all of these companies that seem to be all over the place, Netflix, all of these ones, man. But you don't know how to go about it. You don't work on Wall Street. Hell, you probably don't even have a college degree. Who cares? It's the 21st century. Don't pay a commission to these losers that'll charge you 15% just to push a button from some high rise in New York City. Go to Robinhood.com today, set up an account. It's easy as 1, 2, 3. Robinhood.com is investing for everyone. It's the easiest place to learn as you go, learn as you grow, commission-free investing, plus the tools you need to put your money in motion. Sign up and get your first stock for free. Yeah, certain limitations apply, but that's okay. Break free from commission fees. Like I said, make unlimited commission-free trades in stocks, ETFs, and options with Robinhood Financial. And guess what? As well as buy the hottest cryptocurrencies with Robinhood Crypto. But how much is a Bitcoin today? One Bitcoin is like $33,000 regular dollars. I know you don't have that, but that's okay. Robinhood has fractional shares. You can invest in thousands of stocks and cryptocurrencies with as little as $1. Invest any amount. Choose how much you want to invest, and they will convert from dollars to parts of a whole share. Amazon costs like $3,300 for one share. Don't have $3,300 laying around? Maybe you only have $33? Well, you'll get $33 worth of a $3,300 stock. It's called a fractional share. You can build a balanced portfolio this way. You can invest in a whole wide variety of companies, and you can customize your portfolio with pieces of different companies and funds to help reduce risk. You can also trade in real time. All trades placed during market hours are executed at that time, so you'll always know the share price. You can also keep tabs on your money. You can set up a customized news and notifications to stay on top of your assets as casually or as relentlessly as you like. Controlling the flow of info is up to you. You get to manage your portfolio. You have your portfolio in your pocket, in your smartphone. Everything you need to manage your assets is available in a single app, and you don't have to deal with any loser elitist on Wall Street that isn't any smarter than the person on the corner selling bagels, but because he has a college degree, he gets to charge you money to buy and sell stocks for you? That's nonsense. It's always been nonsense, but now it's the 21st century, and you have Robinhood.com, proud supporters of the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. Enjoy the episode. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. We're going to jump right back into this special series titled 12 Steps to Complete Healing, My Personal Journey Through Each Step in Recovery. In the last segment, we talked about hope, step two. Today, we're going to talk about step three. Step three is categorized as trust in God. Decide to turn your will and your life over to the care of God, the Eternal Father, and His Son, Jesus Christ. Step three is the decision step. In the first two steps, we awakened to what we could not do for ourselves and realized what we needed God to do for us. Then in step three, we were introduced to the only thing that we could do for God. We could make a decision to open ourselves to Him and surrender our entire lives, past, present, and future, and our will about our lives to Him. Step three was an act of agency, freedom. It was the most important choice we ever made. The submission of one's will is really the only uniquely personal thing we have to place on God's altar. It's a hard doctrine, but it's true. The many other things we give to God, however nice that may be of us, are actually things He has already given us. And He has loaned them to us. But when we begin to submit ourselves by letting our wills be swallowed up in God's will, then we are really giving something to Him. Perhaps the greatest discovery of my life, without question, the greatest commitment came when finally I had the confidence in God that I would loan or yield my agency to Him without compulsion or pressure, without any duress, as a single individual alone by myself, no counterfeiting, nothing expected other than the privilege. In a sense, speaking figuratively, to take one's agency, that precious gift, which is essential to life itself, and say, I will do as you direct, is afterward to learn that in so doing, you possess it all the more. When we took step three, we faced the truth that recovery was far more the result of the Lord's efforts than our own. He worked the miracle when we invited Him into our lives. Step three was a decision to allow God to recover and redeem us. It was a decision to allow Him to direct our lives, remembering, of course, that He always respects our agency. Thus, we decided to put our lives in His hands by continuing to follow this spiritually focused program of recovery. When we first attended recovery meetings, we may have felt pressured or even forced by others to be there. But to take step three, we had to decide to act for ourselves. We realized that changing our lives this much had to be our own decision. It wasn't about what our parents did, what they were doing now, or what they wanted. Neither was it about our spouses or families or friends, or what they thought, what they felt, what they did or did not do. We saw we had to be willing to stay clean and sober regardless of anyone else's opinions or choices. Our willingness was the solid foundation on which the balance of recovery rested. When we took this step, we felt terrified of the unknown. What would happen if we humbled ourselves and surrendered our lives and wills completely to the care of God? For many of us, childhood had been very hard, and we were terrified of becoming vulnerable as little children again. We were convinced by past experiences that making a definite commitment was nearly impossible, given the insanity surrounding us in this world. We had seen too many commitments broken. We had broken too many ourselves. The best some of us could do was try what our recovering friends had suggested. Don't use drugs, go to meetings, ask for help. Those who had walked the steps of recovery before us invited us to the experiment with this new way of living. They patiently waited for us to become willing to open the door to God just a little bit. At first, our efforts were anxious and halting. We kept giving the Lord our trust and then taking it back. We worried that He would be displeased at our inconsistency and withdraw His support and love from us. But He didn't. Gradually, we allowed the Lord to demonstrate His healing power and the safety of following His way. Eventually, each of us realized that we not only had to give up our addictions, but we also had to turn our entire will and life over to God. As we did so, we found Him patient and accepting of our faltering efforts to surrender to Him in all things. So many of us get to that point in step one where we can admit that we are powerless and that we need help. Many of us feel a ray of hope when we do that. And when we get on our knees and we humbly and sincerely plead with our Father in heaven to just help us. Being willing in that moment. Oftentimes that moment is fleeting. That spiritual high, that healing, that comfort that we feel doesn't last. Gratefully for me, when that happened, I was able to be completely removed from my environment and from the people that were around me that weren't conducive to my recovery. And I was able to be in a program with other like-minded combat veterans that were going through the same things I was. And where they were there to help me so I could lean on them. I knew that they understood. But in reality, it was a decision that I would take that leap of faith. Having felt that miraculous comfort and healing in that hospital room, over the next several months, I decided that I would do everything that it took. And little by little, that burden got lighter and lighter. And it was a daily decision. Because the second that you decide to do something else, you will find that you will fall back into that insanity again. All of that clarity that you gain, all of that progress that you make will go out the window. And so every day I have to wake up and I have to do step three again and say, I'm going to turn my will and my life completely over to God. And when I don't do that, and when I hold reservations, even like 1 or 2% of my will, things don't go as smooth as they could. And a lot of times, they go the exact opposite. Not that when you decide to trust in God completely that you're not going to be faced with adversity, because that's not the way that it works. Your burdens will probably get heavier. Your struggles will probably get harder. But when you build that foundation, that healthy balance in life, that you nurture your spirituality, which again is a relationship, personal relationship with the higher power, one that motivates you to seek personal revelation, one that motivates you to seek personal growth and progress. Doesn't mean, oh, you have to go to this church or that church, or you have to do this, this, and this with these set of people. Oftentimes that structure and that comfort and that help, that environment of people that love you and want to help you, that helps. But sometimes churches can be very judgmental. And sometimes church environments can be very troublesome for somebody who has struggled with addiction, especially in a small town where everybody knows that about you. And so it's not necessary. What's necessary is you working these steps completely and you submitting your will over to your higher power. And you trusting in that higher power every day and recommitting again and again and again. Our ability to withstand temptation is now grounded in our continual submission to the will of the Lord. We express our need for the power available to us through the Savior's atonement, and we begin to feel that power within us, fortifying us against the next temptation. We have learned to accept life on life's terms. Life doesn't stop. But we begin to see how beautiful life can be when we're free of that bondage. When it's not a minute by minute grind, right? A lot of people think there's a misconception about people in recovery, even early recovery, that you know, everybody is just white knuckling it through, and like, you know, any little thing, any little trigger is gonna set you off, and you're gonna be, you know, off and running with a needle in your arm. It's not that way, especially when you put some months together and you're working the steps and you feel that healing and you feel that fortifying and you feel that temptation that evil force being less and less and less of a threat. You begin to see life and the joys that you have. You're grateful and humble. And that's why it's so easy sometimes to get complacent and to lose perspective like I have and I did, because you do feel so much different. When I used to, you know, tell my story about, you know, first getting into recovery and how bad it was, I was so far removed from that and so disconnected from it that it literally felt like I was telling somebody else's story. And that's why I thought there's no way that I'll ever go back to that. There's no way that I'll ever, you know, fall like that again. But it doesn't happen in one instance. It happens gradually, incrementally. One slight degree change each day. And then before you know it, you feel blindsided. But looking back and doing a complete autopsy and inventory of what happened in my life, it became so clear. So it's always important to stay completely in front of that and not allow that to happen. And it's it gets easier and easier, but every day I wake up and I have to go back to step three and I have to recommit to surrender my will. And not be so shaky, not be so uneven. When things happen in my life, they don't overwhelm me because I have that solid foundation and that balance. And I'm able to take things as they come. And I'm able to stay calm. And through therapy and other things with my wife, we have tools that we've learned now to be able to fight these things that come up. Because life doesn't stop. Step three is where the serenity prayer comes into play. Decide to trust and obey God and change what you can change and accept what you cannot change. The serenity prayer is simple. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, to change the things I can, and to have the wisdom to know the difference. So things that I know that I can't control, like the way other people see me, their perspective of me, their perception of my situation, whether that's the media, whether that's the police, whether that's critics, I know that I can't. It's not about me, that's about them. And so it doesn't bother me anymore. I don't care about what you think of me. There's a common criticism that I hear and see from people. Even though it doesn't affect me like it used to, I still see it and hear it. I'm not blind. That somehow, you know, my whole persona is fake. That I'm really this evil, conniving, manipulative, psychological warfare specialist that's playing all of my supporters and all of the people who love and support me as puppets. And I'm like this mastermind to be able to get people to feel sorry for me and sympathy. And that's why I am public about my struggles. I know that I can't. I know that that's preposterous, and I know that that's not true. And my family knows for sure that that's not true. My true friends know that that is definitely not true, and we laugh about it. But I know that I can't change that. And I know that a lot of that perception from other people is, you know, sicknesses that they have. jealousies, just a bunch of stuff. And so knowing how hard it is to deal with my own mental health, I don't get angry at that, because I know that it's hard, and I know that the adversary and the evil forces are working on those people just like he does on me. And so I used to get very upset, used to affect me so much, and I used to lash out. But you know, that's where the serenity prayer comes in. I have to accept things that I can't change, and I have to focus on changing the things that I can change. And the things that I can change are my own shortcomings and my own issues and my own struggles. And in step 4 and 5 and 6 coming up, we will break that down, and I will talk about my experiences to getting to that place where I can truly feel peace and serenity, and I can take that criticism, and I can take what's constructive, and I can completely block out what's not and what's not true, and still have no animosity towards those people. And it's because I've been able to work a rigorously honest program. I know who I am. I know that God knows who I am, and I know that my family and my circle of close friends know who I am, and for me that is always enough. I know that my children know who their daddy is, and I know that I'm just a person that is trying the best I can to become a better person every day, and to be honest and open and transparent. And as long as I do that, and stay grounded in this program, in this recovery, and work these steps continually, there's nothing that the adversary can throw at me that will destroy me. I've survived so much. But I don't take pride in that, because I know that it's God that has been there to lift me in those times that I should be dead. Pride is a very misunderstood sin. There's no element of pride that is good. And it's hard to say that because, you know, you say, oh, I'm proud. I'm proud to be an American. I'm proud of my country. I'm proud of my service to the country. I'm proud of everything that I've accomplished. But today, knowing what that pride does, any amount of it, I look at things like this. I'm humble to be an American. I'm humble to have overcome so many things. I'm humble to be here today. Not prideful, I'm not proud. We should be humble to be Americans. We should be humble to be children of a loving God. We should be humble. And that humility stands as a barrier to that pride, that when it's able to seep in at any level, any amount, it blinds me, and it makes my will become more important than God's will for me. And that is always the exact moment that I begin that slight deviation, and then before you know it, I am blindsided and I'm right back at rock bottom. And so if one thing I've learned through all of this is that I'm not gonna let that pride do that to me. I'm going to be humble and grateful. And when I'm humble and grateful, I'm able to love my country, but I'm also able to see it for what it really is, which is a beautiful, amazing country that has major flaws that we need to correct. Doesn't mean that I hate the country, and many people who say let's fight for a better country, and there's people that say, oh, you hate the country, why don't you just move, why don't you just get out? No, that's not the way that it works. Those of us who are humble and grateful and not prideful, that's where true change and progress and miracles can happen. And that goes for personal, that goes for your family, that goes for your community, and ultimately that goes for our country, and hopefully ultimately that goes for our entire world. So thanks for listening to this segment of the Come This Far podcast. Step 3, trust in God. Decide to turn your will and your life over to the care of God, the Eternal Father, and His Son, Jesus Christ. And that is not a one-time decision. That is a everyday decision. Catch you on the next one. Step 4 coming up. That's the most difficult one. Looking forward to it. See y'all. See y'all again on the next one. Thanks for listening to the Come This Far podcast with Chris